Agent Edmonds.
He is trying to log on. Having some issues.
Okay. Chair Hagen.
Here.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Vice Chair McKinney.
Present.
Regent Milliken.
Here.
Regent Nichols.
Here.
Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent West. Mr. Chair, we have 10 regents currently present, representing the quorum of the board. We'll update that as Regent Edmonds gets off.
Thank you, Secretary Brinkley. Shout out to Regent Milliken and Regent Nichols. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You zooming in.
Good morning.
Good. Todd, good morning.
Good morning.
Brian, good morning. Again, this is our special budget approval meeting. A little bit of hesitancy. I want to call on President Caboni for something.
For something. First, an announcement and then some recognition. But thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of you may have noticed, I hope you did, that yesterday President Joe Biden signed legislation establishing Juneteenth as a U.S. federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. And the significance of this act should be celebrated by all members of the WKU family as we reflect on the importance of ensuring that the promise of freedom means freedom for all. And we announced earlier this morning that WKU will both add Juneteenth as an official university holiday to our academic calendar each year, but that this year we're going to ask the campus to close on Monday, June 21st, in observance of Juneteenth. And so there'll be no classes and no meetings, and I encourage everyone in the community to separate from your daily routine and reflect on the significance of this day. So appreciate everybody pausing and reflecting on the decision that our Congress and the President announced earlier this week and yesterday evening. Now on to a special recognition. This is always, Ms. Chair, bittersweet. I've had the privilege of working with you for the past year and a half as chair, and you have served on the Board of Regents for 12 years ably. This is your third term as chair of the Board of Regents, and many people don't know this, but Regent Higdon is the only person in WKU's history to have served three terms as chair of the board. And we have had, as an institution, so many significant accomplishments during his leadership. I just wanted to remind everyone of some of those, because I think they're remarkable. During his terms as chair, WKU opened a new education building. We broke ground on an alumni center. We opened a new music hall. We renovated the student union. We had tremendous exponential growth in our nursing program. We moved from the Sun Belt to Conference USA. We opened the Honors and International Center. And I know this was a special one. We won our first Conference USA football championship and finished ranked 24th in the nation. We graduated our first class of Doctor of Physical Therapy students. You managed through a presidential transition, only have had 9 of those in our university's history. You launched a revamped scholarship program, including the Hilltopper Guarantee and Border Scholarships. During his chair, we've removed at least 7 buildings from campus. We're going to complete the first year village, open and dedicate a new College Heights Foundation building, the Cliff Todd Center. LifeWorks at WKU opened during his tenure as chair. And lastly, if not most importantly, we navigated one of the largest challenges in our university's history, coronavirus, and have emerged on the other side stronger and well-positioned than we did going in. And the most important accomplishment, and it's the reason that we're all here, Regent Higdon, your signature appears on nearly 20,000 alumni diplomas. What a remarkable term of service you have had. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your friendship, your guidance, and your good counsel. People don't know how lonely these jobs are sometimes. And I'm so thankful for having an ear to bend and someone to listen to me complain, to celebrate with me the things that we have to celebrate privately, and most importantly, for the 24-hour rule, or we don't act on something until we pause and think and make sure we're doing the right thing. And during your term of service, you've had strong, stable leadership for this university. And on behalf of the entire community, I want to thank you and Nancy, because none of this happens without the support of a spouse. Nancy, thank you for all you've done for Casey and for me and for this institution, for supporting Freddie, for the long drives up and down, for the Thursday night dinners, for the cooking at the house that I've been invited to partake in, and for your friendship. We will miss seeing you at these meetings, but we won't miss seeing you because we know you're going to be right back at the Hilltopper Club for football season and big supporters. So to both of you, thank you. The spirit lives among both of you in a way that is remarkable, and we thank you for your service. Go Tops!
Chair that has served three times.
Yes, but
I think this is a very special, significant gift that will remind you of the
hill. Thank you. Thank you. President Gamoli, thank you for those kind words. I just want to make one brief remark. First, thank to all my fellow board members for your support and collaboration. I look in the history of the other board members that I've served with, and outstanding individuals, which leads me to a comment that I want to make, and hopefully I won't emotionally break up a little bit, but I remember arriving in 2009, feeling the privilege and the honor for the opportunity to serve on this board. And several folks gave me the same words of wisdom that I want to reiterate and pass along to my fellow board members and to the administration. And that those words were three simple words, be all in. And so with Nancy, we have tried to be all in. And so I encourage all of you to always be all in. Take every opportunity that you can to immerse yourself in whatever activity that this university allows you to participate in. The rewards are tremendous, and I can assure you, time passes quickly. So 12 years have gone quickly. And it's been an honor and privilege to serve with you and for you. And I've had the opportunity to serve with two great presidents, President Gary Ransdell and now President Beth Bowen, as well as two fine first ladies. And I would be remiss if I didn't especially acknowledge Julia McDonald, because she and I showed up at the same time. She's been a tremendous, tremendous steward of this Board of Regents. And so, Julia, thank you, Tim, and thank you all once again. It's been my privilege. We will proceed to the Finance and Budget Committee section. Chair Kenny, you lead that section.
Okay. Before we get started, I'd like to introduce everybody to Jesse Napier. She's our new Director of Internal Audit. She comes to us with great internal audit experience from Vanderbilt and the University of Tennessee. So if you get a chance at the break, introduce yourself for everybody. Yes. All right, so FB1, approval of the operating budget. Yes, that's first. Start with the R's part.
Can I get the flipper, maybe? We always have technical difficulties with the budget. Before we get started with the presentation, as I was telling Jason earlier, it'll be a full presentation, but really not much has changed since we presented the budget in May. So I think it was helpful, Jason, for us to have the pre-budget workshops, giving the board the opportunity to really drill down into the budget. Also, I had the opportunity this week to meet with Shane and David to go over not only the budget, but other items, and I thought that went well. Got a lot of questions out of the way, so I guess we're still waiting on the
Anthony's coming to get it. If you want to call it out, I can do that as well.
Okay, well, you can, let's go ahead and move to the next slide. So what I'll be covering this morning is just a quick outline of the development process itself. I'm just going over a high-level budget summary, some highlights on the revenue budget, highlights on the expenditure budget, the budget balancing strategies, capital budget highlights, and I know that Brian Russell is on Zoom if we have any specific questions on those, and basically the next steps as we move forward. So next slide. Next. So first off, let me say, and I know we always like to think we do this, but we really do here at WKU. We have a very campus-wide representation during the budget, involvement and collaboration, and I can say full transparency in the budget. So next slide. So I've showed you this flowchart before, but just a reminder, again, the collaborative budget process. You see that with all the budget committees and how they operate, talking back and forth, as well as our campus constituents, our faculty and staff senate, and our student government association, and then how those work to frame the budget. The budget then goes to campus leadership, which then comes to the Board of Regents for approval. Next slide. So a quick review of the timeline once again. We started working on the budget in November with the campus governance committees and the campus constituents. And again, you see how we work through going through the budget request with the operating allocation committee, and then how the OAC makes recommendations on fixed costs up to the BEC and then on to campus leadership. That went in early May, and then we started having basically pre-budget workshops with the board, and then bring the final budget today for your approval. So next slide. Thank you. And so this just gives you a flavor. I'm not going to go through all these names, but remember what I talked about, a campus-wide representation and collaboration. So this shows you the amount of people that are involved in this budget process. So if you hear word on the street that we don't have involvement, this shows you exactly the amount of involvement we do have. So this is the Operating Allocation Committee, which is currently co-chaired by Christy Smith, who you guys know, and Belinda Higginbotham, who is our current bursar, who is taking VSIP. So this will be her last go around with the operating budget. But you see all the representations that we have on the Operating Allocation Committee. This is the Capital Allocation Committee, and that's chaired by Brian Russell, our Chief Facilities Officer. And again, the wide representation that we have from faculty, staff, deans, and our campus constituents. And this is the Budget Executive Committee, which is chaired by Provost Stevens and myself. And just to kind of, this is the committee that really works through the guts of the budget. And so we have Faculty Senate representation, several deans, faculty, VPs, and again, our campus constituents. So just to go through some high-level data on the budget itself. So for those of you who actually took the opportunity to read through the budget document, what we did, because fiscal year 21 was such an odd year as far as budgets go because of all the one-time assumptions that were baked into that budget around COVID. So what we did, we would typically start with the prior year as a base, but we started with fiscal year 20 to take basically all the noise out of the budget. And so you'll see all the reference for fiscal year 20. So the change in the budget from fiscal year 20 to what we're presenting today, is about a reduction of $12 million or 3%. And you see how those categories change. The large change in the auxiliary, just as a reminder, and I don't want to be duplicative, but most of that is related to when we outsourced our bookstore to Barnes & Noble. That was that large reduction that you see there. And this is how our budget looks graphically. So you can see most of our budget is in the unrestricted E&G and smaller in the restricted. And the restricted is made up of grants and contracts and the federal money that we get for to support scholarship health. Moving on to the revenue, so you can see that the vast majority of our revenue, 69%, is made up of tuition and fees and state appropriation. But by and large, we're a tuition-supported school, so almost half of our revenue comes directly from tuition. Again, and you can see that graphically, half of our budget from the tuition and fees. A few highlights on the tuition and fees. Our tuition is expected to increase slightly, basically as a result of several of the new scholarship programs that I know Dr. Clooney has and Ethan has gone over with the board before, the Hilltopper Guarantee, the WKU Family Scholarship, and the Board of State Scholarship. At this point, there's no need for us to be concerned. First-time freshman enrollment indicators, as far as paid housing deposits and application fees, remain strong, despite limited access that our admissions folks has had to high schools during the COVID year. And the really good news, I think, for our students this year, and I think that's what we need to focus on, is that the distance learning fee that was charged to students taking online courses that we paused during the current fiscal year, we've permanently eliminated that. So that's great news for our students. So students aren't being penalized for modality changes. Again, just as a reminder, the CPE, or the Council on Postsecondary Education, has statutory authority for setting tuition. Typically what they do is they set a cap that institutions are not allowed to exceed. This year, they set the cap for 2 years at 3% and not to exceed 2% in any of those 2 years. So what we are recommending is a tuition increase of 2% for this year, and graduate tuition will remain unchanged because of basically recruiting issues. And so just remember that the 2% increase in tuition is less than the elimination of the distance ed fee. So this is what our state appropriation looks like. More good news there. So our base appropriation was increased by $757,000. And that was the performance funding that we received in the current year. They built it into the base going forward into 22. We also received an additional 1.4 in performance funding that will most likely be built into the base for the upcoming year. You'll see that we also are funding for the Gatton Academy and the Mezzanet remained flat. More good news from the state is that they actually, the KDRS contribution rate increased, but they kept everyone whole in the current year, so our budget was increased by about $3.6 million to cover that increase. That subsidy will go down to 50% over multiple years. Again, on the auxiliary, just as a reminder, auxiliaries are self-supporting units. They use fees or third-party contracts to generate revenue. Our auxiliaries combine to about $16 million. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the significant decrease in auxiliaries is a direct result of that outsourcing to Barnes & Noble. Sales and services is a smaller part of the revenue budget. Again, they're self-generating, self-supporting, so any increase or decline is offset by a like increase or decline on the expenditure side. We're expecting for these activities to return more to normal than in the COVID year.
basically because of a restart of athletic activities and events and rentals. So on the expense side, you see how that breaks down. Again, a large portion of our budget is personnel. So almost 50% of the expenditure budget is made up of personnel. And you see how all of those categories break down between unrestricted, restricted, auxiliary, and total. That just shows you graphically what it looks like. So most of the expenditures are down in all categories, with the exception of an increase of about $5 million having to do with our new scholarship program. Academic affairs is the largest division, which is, as it should be, we're an academic institution. That totals $156 million, or 47% of our expenditure budget. The great news this year is that we were able to basically honor the recommendation of the BEC and actually add it to it. The BEC recommendation, if you remember right when we presented earlier, was a salary increase pool of around 1.5%. We were able to, the BEC recommended a slight increase to the President's Strategic Initiative Fund. He made the recommendation that he chose not to take the increase to his strategic initiative fund, so we took those funds and moved it into the salary pool. So we were able to put the salary pool from 1.5 to 2%. Those salary adjustments will become effective January 1, and it's still to be determined how that salary increase will be distributed. It will be most likely a combination of compression, results of the compensation study, and some type of cost of living. So the president, the provost, and myself, working with campus constituents, will start working on that after July 1. Also, as part of the ramp process, the Operating Allocation Committee makes recommendations up to the BEC on certain fixed costs. These were the fixed cost increases that are included in the budget. About a $400,000 increase to IT for software contractual increases, some assistantships, $60,000 in the Ogden College, some funding for our marching band of $160,000, and again, a small increase to the strategic initiative. And this is how the expenditures by division breaks out. So you'll see the largest portion of the budget being in academic affairs. And that's how it breaks down by category within the various divisions. So to balance the budget this year, there will be reduction targets for the units of $5.8 million. Now that is, we're moving in the right direction because those reductions are going down over time. And these aren't new reductions, but basically reductions that were not made permanent in prior years. So it is going down. Academic affairs will have a target of $3.1 million that will be distributed out to the various academic units, and the administrative support units will be $2.7 million. Also, I think what's important for campus to understand, the COVID year was a difficult year. If you remember right, we had a $27 million target in the budget to reach. And a lot of the reduction was managed centrally, which meant restrictions on pro cards and constant monitoring of hiring and all of those things. These budget reduction targets will be managed at the local level by deans and vice presidents. So our purchasing office will be reaching out to deans and vice presidents to see how they want to manage those pro cards, but it will not be central management. It will be managed by the deans and vice presidents.
Susan, could I add just one note there? You all recall we've been talking about a budget imbalance for 4 years. We've made tremendous strides at bringing that number down, but to eliminate it requires making permanent reductions, not using one-time dollars. And so the expectation that we have is that those which are continuing numbers from previous years, the deans and vice presidents this year will make at least 50% of those reductions with permanent dollars in the coming academic year, and the other 50% will be made in the subsequent academic year. which means that in 2 years, we essentially will have eliminated those carry-forward reductions. So getting us not just to full budget stability, but fully operational ramp model finally. So I know this is taking a lot of work, a lot of discipline among unit leaders, but we're finally at a place where, given the enrollment trends and everything, where we are on the upswing, and it is a very good place for us to be, particularly as we emerge from COVID.
So just a quick slide on our capital budget. So the total capital budget, about $65.5 million. And authorized projects in House Bill 352 is the demolition of the Tate Page Hall, the demolition of the Garrett Conference Center. Also, as all of you know, the renovation of the library, the Commons Project. We have a capital renewal pool of about $10 million. And upgrading our infrastructure of about $1 million. And if Brian Russell is on there, Brian, do you have anything to add to the capital budget?
One I'd like to say is the numbers that you see here represented are the authorized or authorization amounts from the state of Kentucky. And as an example, demolished Tate Page Hall is actually less than $2 million. As an example. So these numbers and some of these were just authorization amounts. So.
That's a great point. Thank you, Brian. So next steps going forward. The implementation of RAMP, I think when I first started, we were talking about the process would be a crawl, walk, run. And as Dr. Caboni just said, with what we're going to be doing with getting our budget completely in balance, I think we're going to be in full run mode here. And again, we will be working closely with the dean's, Vice President Logan's office in setting revenue targets for the academic units. Really for RCM or RAMP to work well, it really becomes a year-round budget cycle. And again, a long-term financial plan, which will go closely with what Dr. Caboni was talking about, getting our budget in balance, looking at a development of a long-term financial plan of 3, 5, and 10 years. Looking forward to the 23 budget, we will be presenting that initially to the Board of Regents in late April of next year, and with budget workshops in May of 22. So, Jason, what we started this year, we're going to be continuing, so. And we will continue the monthly budget monitoring that we started this year as a part of COVID. I think that's important. I think that's prudent financially to continue not managing the budgets for the deans and vice presidents, but to always monitor them. As far as payroll spend, procurement spend, the budget versus actual report that we bring to the regents, and quarterly cash and financial position monitoring. And then presenting reports to the president and provost on a monthly basis. And I will open it up for questions now.
Does anybody have any questions? I have a few if it's okay. Mm-hmm. So you and I had already discussed this, but just to highlight in the revenue, show the $13.6 million as carry forward funds, and you clarified for me that is from the budgetary savings from this fiscal year that we have not yet closed out.
Yes.
So would it be fair to say that as we look at this and the media continues to talk about this budget hole that we're trying to close, the savings we did last year, the deans and others will be using that money to bridge those gaps. Is that correct? So, mm-hmm. What do you think, and I know we have not closed out the budget year, and I know that will come much later in this process, how much more carry forward do you think that we're going to have when we close that out, just as a rough estimate?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, Shane, and what I've actually talked to Christy about putting together plans for future, being able to actually forecast what our carry forward will be at any point during the year. We should be able to have a forecasting model that will give us a good estimate of what that would be. Typically, in any given year, our carry forward has been anywhere between 27 to 35 million. So the 13 million is a small portion of that. But really, as Dr. Cavoni said, to make the ramp model fully functional, that's why you need to get the $32 million amount out of the budget, so that really all the carry forward then goes back to the academic units.
But the amount of carry forward we had this last year was substantially more than what we've had in previous years because of the tight budgetary controls that we put in place.
Right, right. That's what I would expect, yes.
No, not quite. Sorry, just thinking. I was just pausing to see if anybody else had a question. Dr. Gavoni, could you speak to us just a little bit about how you think this budget helps you achieve our strategic plan? Any innovations in it or anything along those lines?
I do. I think that what we've talked about from the outset is the strategic plan being the guiding document and the budget model a support of that plan. And if you look at the $2.5 million that we will again have for strategic investment priorities of the institution, as we announce next year, where it is we're going to place our efforts and our emphases. We'll continue to work on recruitment, retention, and graduation. People ask what the vision is for the university. I've been very clear since before I even started, we were going to be a student-centered applied research university. And so we will continue that student-centered approach. The additional $5 million in discount for student scholarships, I think, continues our commitment making sure WKU is accessible and affordable for every student, no matter their family's economic means. On the research side, as we exit COVID and the federal government creates opportunities for funding, we've had some tremendous wins. Two announcements of almost $2 million each federal grants in the spring semester. We're going to continue that momentum and grow the portfolio of sponsored research, and that's going to require some additional investment. And then lastly, I think this is crucial for everyone to understand. In the 4 years since I've been here, we have created 6% in salary increases in those 4 years. It took 7 years for us to create 7% of increases before I got here. And so we're accelerating the investment in our people and in our programs. And my hope and my expectation is that we'll be able to continue that type of moderate yet regular increases to our salary pool. We have to continue to do that with inflation and being competitive in the marketplace. And then the last comment is, you will see during the coming weeks and months, the institution begin to reconceptualize itself as a result of VSIP, the Voluntary Separation Incentive Program. As individuals who have been with us have decided to take advantage of that, I've asked leadership to reimagine how their organizations function. And we've already had a set of announcements from marketing communications about their reorganization where they've rewarded performance and elevated some folks. Athletics has taken an internal approach to reorganize and rethink itself. We've done had similar activities in philanthropy, and David Brinkley is undertaking a complete overhaul of how it is public media is organized. And so I think that what you're seeing is a budget that while it requires discipline, also shifts our focus to the places where we need to invest and creates opportunities for rewards.
I don't want to hog the conversation, so somebody else has a question. I would like to kind of go on record here that how tough this last year was. And when we have that much carry forward, to recognize how we generated that. And the way we generated that was through tight budgetary controls that, quite honestly, at times shifted the cost of the activities that the faculty and staff were doing to the faculty and staff themselves. That I've talked to staff who said they had to work from home and they were afraid to ask for reimbursement for things because the budgetary controls were so tight that their department chair or their dean felt like they couldn't get it. And so, the whatever cameras they needed or other things they bought, for me personally, as I bought things and they didn't work and I tried other things, I didn't ask for those things. So, that carry forward money, not the money that we're talking about here, because obviously it has a need, but as we finalize that and we move into the
the closing out of the budget. Thinking about, again, how can we invest in innovation? How can we invest back in our people? And I'm not, I don't know if this is even like a one-time payment to faculty and staff of $500. If thinking about it as a retention bonus, if you were here in January when COVID started and you were still here when we closed out the budget in 21, here's $500 for all of the expenses that we know you took on for yourself, and thank you for being here and staying here. Something along those lines. But at the same time, we have to find a way to spur innovation. And you know, the innovation that we have encouraged in the budget cuts for the last 15 years that have been imposed on us have been innovation and budget cuts. And we need to find a way to grow out of this. And as we hire on new deans and a new provost, you know, hopefully the first thing we don't tell them is, okay, welcome, now cut your budget. Maybe welcome, here's some innovation funds. You know, maybe it's setting aside some of those funds into an innovation account and allowing faculty and staff to apply for those. Just something more creative, innovative, to tie to our strategic plan. Thank you.
Any
All right.
Jason, can I just mention one thing? I would be remiss if I didn't. I really want to recognize Brian Denning. He really stepped in at a time when I had turnover amongst the budget staff, and just really did a great job stepping in at the last minute and pulling this all together. So I just really want to thank Brian for his work.
Building on that, I want to thank all of you, because this has been the most inclusive and transparent budget process that we've had since I've been on the board. It really helps us to accomplish our fiduciary duties. We can be involved up front rather than right before this meeting. So thank you guys for slowly improving and getting us to the point where we needed to be. So thank you guys. Anybody else have any comments or questions regarding the budget?
Real quick, since my name was mentioned, one of the things that we noticed through this process, and several of you all know how critical and detailed I've been related to this planning process in this last year related to staff and faculty salaries. One of the big awakening moments for me was when we were able to craft a plan in public media and present it, and the idea that it would be accepted and we would be allowed to manage ourselves out of some of the issues that had been created over the last decade and a half, right? So the empowerment that comes through the full implementation of this for the individual areas, for the deans, for the divisions, I don't think that's being stated enough. It was something that I was unclear about until we saw it and how it might work in our own house. So I think this budget reflects a good step forward. I wasn't going to mention the 2% increase on the tuition, because I think when you looked at the idea that we passed on that in a very difficult year last year when we had the opportunity to raise it, so we would have had the opportunity to raise tuition twice, and you look at how that averages out, I think that the media has also misrepresented the idea that the 2% goes for salary increases. I think that's inaccurate. I think that it goes toward the budget, and the budget allocation of where salaries go is really up to the administration and how they distribute that money. So mine's not really a question. It's more of a comment of the more I educate myself and the longer I'm on this board, the more we see that there's a transitional time in this process that is slowly taking place. A lot of us want things to happen tomorrow. We want them to be immediate. But, you know, I tell people all the time, it's about the long game. Well, we're living the long game. And that's a piece that I don't think we focus on enough. So I appreciate everything that's gone into this process.
If I could comment what Regent Brinkley said, and it's a follow-up also to the innovation question. The notion that innovation is going to come from my office is a fallacy. The reality is innovation has to come from deans and vice presidents and department chairs and faculty and staff and bubble up. And I think that what you're beginning to see is what a budget model that decentralizes responsibility enables. It enables local leadership who is willing to take risks, to think creatively, to do new things,
and be rewarded for it, beginning to take that action. And I appreciate that. It does take time. It is a complete mind shift in the way in which an organization functions. But with fresh eyes, willingness to risk, and an appreciation for not waiting to be told what to do, but to come up with what needs to be done on your own, is where we're headed. And I'm really proud of the work and the accomplishment of the organization in moving that direction.
Okay. There's no further questions or comments. I'll entertain a motion to approve the 2021-2022 operating budget.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Linda and George. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign?
Aye.
Scared.
He was in favor.
All right. Motion passes. And that's all we have for the Finance and Budget Committee.
Thank you, Finance Chair McKinney. I want to add and echo Jason's comments to Susan and her team. But I want to add to that in thanking Jason personally for his inspiring leadership of the Budget and Finance Committee and efforts and time and commitment that he's put into it with his expertise. Confirmation of that is the comments made by Regent Spiller and Regent Brinkley that the transparency and the results and the direction are all very, very positive and motivational. And so, Jason, thank you for your stewardship. We'll next move to in my agenda nomination committee report. Regent Nichols chaired that committee. So, Regent Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The nominating committee was made up of myself, Regent Richard, and Regent West. And we are happy to unanimously recommend our state officers for the coming year. We are recommending Regent Hillwell as chair of the board. We are recommending Regent McKibben as the vice chair. I'm recommending Regent Ball as the secretary of the board. And I'm going to take any questions or ask for a motion of approval.
I think you said Regent McKinney as vice chair instead of Milliken.
I'm sorry. But I did not think that you would correct me.
You almost slipped that in there, Jason. That was
snaky right there.
I guess I was thinking of who's character device here. It's
So we have a report from the nomination committee tendering a slate of officers for the new year. Any other comments, nominations, or reflections by other board members? And if not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Got a motion by Regent Brinkley.
Second.
Seconded by Regent West. Any further discussions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of the proposed slate of officers, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign? Passes unanimously. Thank you, George, and your team, Regent West and Regent thank you for
Chair for helping me with messing up the
bench. Appreciate that. I think this is your third term as chair of nominating committee. So, thank you for all your work and thanks to the committee. Okay, that concludes the nominating committee report. And there's no other items for our special budget agenda. I will direct the Regents to look at our upcoming calendar events. Special emphasis on your retreat for August 5th and 6th. A great time to be all in for your university and to understand the workings of our university. faculty staff convocation on the 16th, your next committee meeting October 22nd, homecoming October 30th, December 10th is your quarterly meeting. Obviously, this is a special meeting, and so we're restricted on any other actions or business that we can take. So at this time, unless someone wants to specifically address either a follow-up question on finance or budget or the nominating committee, I think we are prepared for adjournment. Hearing none, we are now adjourned.